presentation. Coming this afternoon, Dr. Sullivan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, council members. I'm Patrick Sullivan. I'm from Cornell University, and I'm the vice chair of the SSC. And our chair, Jake Kreitzer, can't be here today. He's on paternity leave, so we're all happy for him. So today I'm going to be covering a number of different things, including American Place and Gulf of Maine Cod rebuilding strategies, and then we'll go on to Monkfish, then some discussion of the haddock spillover, white hake, red crab, which I think Chris pretty much covered, Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, and then we're going to be discussing sea scallops. So I'm not exactly sure how you want me to proceed, but I'll just go ahead, and if you want me to stop, just let me know, and we'll do that.
Unless someone has a burning question during the presentation, let's hold them to the end.
Okay, great. So let me start with the American Place and Gulf of Maine cod rebuilding strategies. And so there we go. So what I've done on each of these slides, I basically have one slide for each of the topics that we're going to discuss. And the way the slides are laid out is I lay out the terms of reference, which are a little bit smaller print because presumably you know what they are. And then I go into some brief points associated with the SSC findings. So for the American Place and Gulf of Maine cod rebuilding strategies, the terms of reference were to review the 2012 assessments of American Place and Gulf of Maine cod and comment on the rebuilding strategies. So the points that the SSC wishes to make is that we will implement in 5 years after the current ABCs have passed, and that these are based on procedures outlined by the PDT and the plan developed so that recovery is projected within the 10-year time frame, with a focus on F rather than biomass. We're looking at there are some options in terms of constant versus time varying F strategies to be considered, and we suggest perhaps using a control rule for bounding the year-to-year change. We suggest paying attention to metrics beyond biomass, for example, stock structure, and in particular age composition, to see how things are going with both of these stocks. And then in the process of examining rebuilding strategies, consider the mixed stock consequence as well, and there may be some trade-offs associated with that in terms of rebuilding these stocks faster relative to harvesting other stocks associated with them. Next, on monkfish. The terms of reference were to review information provided by the monkfish plan development team and specify OFLs and develop ABC recommendations. So the acceptable biological catch, the ABC, for the two monkfish stocks remains at status quo levels of 7,592 metric tons for the northern stock and 12,316 metric tons for the southern stock. Can we see that up there? I guess we can. The overfishing limits, OFL, for the two monkfish stocks were updated to 17,805 metric tons for the northern stock, 23,204 metric tons for the southern stock. We wish to point out that the accuracy of the age estimates for monkfish remains the most significant concern for the SSC, and a new benchmark assessment should be conducted when and if new information comes to light that changes our perception of this particular life history characteristic. The rationale for the APC control rules currently in place were originally intended as an interim approach, but should be revisited and possibly revised in the future when more information becomes available. In terms of haddock spillover for Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank and Gulf of Maine haddock, we were tasked with reviewing the work of the groundfish PDT on haddock spillover and address whether we agree or disagree with PDT. We have quite a bit of discussion in the document we provide for you. Obviously, there are questions of what spillover actually means. Does it mean normal back and forth movement across the boundary, or does it mean a higher expansion of the stock when the stock is at higher density? We surmise that it's probably this latter that the question is directed at, but being clear about which of these two we're focusing on is critical for dealing with things properly in the assessment. We note that exchange rates are not well defined. There's been some suggestion in the literature of about 10% movement in high density years, but this is quite a variable across the different pieces of information that we've looked at. There's also the question of whether this is happening stock-wide or whether it's a local kind of phenomenon. Furthermore, when we looked at this, and the PDT looked at this, and the assessment scientists looked at this, we found that the 2003 year class was pretty strong as well, and we did not see expansion back then. As a consequence of all of this, there appears to be no scientific basis for adjusting Haddock ACLs. And we suggest that a systematic risk evaluation be conducted if we really want to look into this in a systematic way. Regarding white PAIC OFLs and ABCs, the terms of reference were to provide an OFL and ABC for each year for these years, and so we determined that the acceptable biological catches for white hake were 4,642 metric tons for 2014, 4,713 metric tons for 2015, 4,645 metric tons for 2016. The overfishing limits are respectively 6,082 metric tons for 2014, 6,237 metric tons for 2015, and 6,314 metric tons for 2016. Moving on to red crab. I think we covered this.
There might be a few more recommendations.
Okay, all right. So we were asked to review the red crab landings, discard and discard data, and review the interim acceptable biological catches and control rules for developing the ABC recommendations. And our findings were that the ABC for the red crab, as Chris pointed out, fishery remains at status quo level of 1,775 metric tons. The OFL for the red crab fishery remains unknown given the data poor nature of this assessment. Market constraints on the catch of red crab need to be analyzed and communicated more systematically to the extent that proprietary restrictions will allow in a small fleet, since these market constraints have been proposed as the major reason landings are consistently below the ABC. So if it is due to market constraints, it would be good to have some quantitative information that that supports that. Discard rates and trends should continue to be analyzed, in particular to determine if a seemingly increasing trend in the discard rates is primarily due to more thorough reporting as opposed to a biological driver. Finally, the effects of harvest on the sex ratio and the sex-specific size structure of the stock and the implications of those effects should be more thoroughly investigated, consistent with the request from the industry to revisit the male-only harvest strategy. In terms of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, provide the OFL and ABC for 2014-2015. We found that the acceptable biological catch for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder for 2014-2015 should not exceed 500 metric tons, and we suggest the catch should be reduced as much as practicable. The overfishing limit for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder remains unknown. Thank you. A more thorough scientific examination of the process for determining productivity in Georges Bank yellowtail flounder stock and the more robust analytical tools for determining its status and developing management measures is needed. Finally, with regard to sea scallops, we were asked to determine OFL and ABC recommendations for fishing years 2014 and 2015. In the scallop, FMP OFL is equivalent to catch associated with FMSY, which is at 0.38, and ABC control rule catch is set at 25% chance of exceeding OFL. So based on this control rule and updated survey and fishery information, the SSC recommends an OFL for 2014, an OFL of 29,848 with an ABC which includes the discards of 25,680. If we estimate the discards to be 6,193, that results in an ABC that's available to the fishery, that's without the discards, of 19,487. In 2015, we recommend the OFL of 36,693. The ABC, including discards, is 31,730. The discards estimated will be 7,069, I believe that is. And then finally, the resulting ABC available to the fishery is 24,662, if my eyes don't deceive me. My presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Dr. Sullivan on the SSC report? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Sullivan. Just a question about the Georgia Bank Yellowtail Flounder OFL and ABC. The SSC, of course, has social scientists and economists on board, so I assume that they must have contributed to the language offered up regarding should not exceed 500 metric tons and catch should be reduced as much as practicable. Was there any discussion by the SSC as to what that means, as much as practicable? Because you've given an upper limit and you're suggesting it should go low, but what kind of guidance, if any, was provided by the SSC relative to that specific key phrase, as much as practicable?
Thanks. I believe last time that we made a recommendation, one of our suggestions was that perhaps it should be all bycatch. But we recognize that's not our purview to make it that. So we decided to make the wording a little bit more general to allow the council to decide how that might be implemented. So we went with be reduced as much as practicable.
Further questions for Dr. Sullivan? Mayor Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a quick question, or maybe just some discussion about this slide that's up here at the moment. And as you can see, for 2014, the estimate of discards in the scallop fishery is, 6,193 metric tons. And the discussion came up briefly at the SSC meeting, but the scientist who was presenting was on the phone, and it made for an awkward discussion. And there was no resolution. And I think from an industry perspective, what I've heard from others is that they really need to look at this number. It's quite high. It's increased dramatically in recent years. And the majority of these discards are incidental, unseen discards that are assumed killed by the dredge. And it's an estimate based on a couple of studies that occurred, one in the U.S. and one in Canada some time ago. We use a very different dredge now, and there's a lot of concerns about the biomass going down and the discards going up. The answer to that question appeared to be that the total biomass is predominantly smaller individuals at the moment because we have these recruitment events. But these are done in metric tons, and so it's not counting individuals. That answer is unclear to me. I think that Deidre, as the staff person for scallops, is going to look into this, and we may hear more from her tomorrow, or we may not, because these conversations went on last week, and her ability to get the detailed information that people are looking for is probably somewhat limited. So I just raised the issue so people are aware of it. It is something that I think before we set specifications for the 2014 fishing year in November that we really need to look into quite a lot. There's just been a lot of change. This discard, this method of estimating discards for unseen mortality by the dredge was accepted in the 2010 benchmark. There will be a new benchmark for scallops done in June of 2014 as well, so that might be an opportunity to address it. But in the short term, just the methodology of how it's, you know, that information that was accepted at the benchmark is currently being used as we calculate these particular fishing years is quite important.
Russ.
Let me try and provide a little bit of information about that. The discard mortality rates that were accepted for the 2010 benchmark assessment are assumptions based on the studies that you cited. And those assumptions are that in the mid-Atlantic, 10% of the total landings basically are 10% of the basically based on the landings, approximately 10% of that is that unaccounted for discard, or not discard, but scallops that are killed by the gear in the water. And that estimate is actually higher on Georges Bank. It's 20%. And the difference between those two assumptions is the habitat. Harder bottom habitat on Georges Bank assumed to result in a higher mortality rate. The center believes that this is an area that warrants additional research. We would be very supportive of an RSA type of project that would take a look at this before the next benchmark assessment. I believe it was a medium priority on the last RSA call for proposals, and the center would like to really emphasize that this is an area where additional research is needed.
All set, Mayor Beth. John.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that. At the scallop committee meeting the other day, we had the woman from the HABCAM group that talked about looking at millions of slides, not seeing any of this incidental mortality in the slides. And I know a lot of people around here, including myself, have a high degree of confidence in the HABCAM. So I think, you know, if it's good for determining biomass, I think it ought to be good for determining incidental mortality as well.
Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree that this is a question that needs resolution. But relative to the scheduling of the 2014 benchmark, Russ, is that something that could be identified as a high priority and an investigation or study initiated as soon as possible, and then that could feed into the benchmark? Or what would be the timing on that input into the benchmark?
It might be a challenge to actually get to launch a field study that would look at this directly. We may actually have data in hand already, given that we've done some HABCAM work behind dredge tracks and things like that. The concern here is a temporal one. You would want to come in and try and observe that unaccounted for mortality almost immediately after the dredge tow occurred. And sometimes there's days or weeks time in between when a survey dredge tow was done versus when the HABCAM work is done. That's why a design field, a coordinated field effort, where you're dredging and then immediately reoccupying that area, it probably shows the greatest promise in terms of trying to generate a decent estimate for use for stock assessment purposes.
Thank you. Further questions for Dr. Sullivan? Questions from the audience? Seeing none, Drew.
Just Drew McKevich, Fisheries of Olifant. I actually have a procedural question on the SSC meeting on the scallops. There wasn't a quorum when the SSC met. So, I mean, is the conversation afterwards that happens privately, is that considered meeting the quorum needs?
No, the question you ask is fair, Drew, and so we were scheduled to have a quorum at the meeting. Our quorum is 8. We had 6 members there. And so we put together a report based on our findings there, and then I circulated it to the other SSC members and asked them to review the material and the report and see if they agreed.
And so we had 10 members in total, including the six that were at the meeting, all agree. So, whether that constitutes a quorum, I don't know in the context of council process.
And has this been done before by the SSC, or is this the first time?
I believe we might have done this before in my 15 years on the SSC, but I can't recall a specific instance.
Tom?
I think something similar happened at the end of a meeting once where SSC members left and a quorum evaporated. I forget, that might have actually been Red Crab, Chris. It was for a Red Crab specs package in the past.
Yeah, actually, I remember that also. That Red Crab, that was a controversial one, too. But obviously concerning that we did not have a full quorum and a full discussion at the time. And plus, remember the Science Center wasn't even present either. I mean, she was there by phone. But I think we can all agree that was not an optimal setting for a question and answer. So it doesn't – the scholarship industry doesn't feel that the full – potential of the review by SSC was really met in this scenario, and obviously very concerned about that.
I can't see the face. Sorry, it's dark in the room. I can't see your face. Oh, Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. Dr. Sullivan, could you provide a little more detail on how the SSC came up with its advice relative to Georgia's Bank Yellowtail Flounder? The track study said that the catch advice was that it should be well below 500 metric tons, and the SSC recommended an acceptable biological catch should not exceed 500 metric tons. Those seem to be two different perspectives on what's biologically justifiable.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I recall the track not saying well below, but that was I thought actually the SSC had some wording that was actually pretty similar to what the track had said.
I'm just comparing the two slides.
Okay.
Here.
Where did you get that slide? That was earlier today?
Yeah. So well below.
Yeah, I recall differently. Basically, I recall that that the track, I was at the track meeting also. I recall that the track meeting was that we needed less than 500 metric tons in order to achieve some rebuilding.
Okay.
Dave.
David Gaethel, Hampton, New Hampshire. Hi, Pat. How you doing?
Good.
Nice to
Thank
see you.
Appreciate it.
I have a question on the American Place and Gulf of Maine Cod, and it may be because I don't have the PDT report, but the I'll read the sentence because PDT presented possible methods for determining rebuilding strategies for Gulf of Maine cod in place to be implemented in 5 years after the current ABCs have been established by the SSC have passed. So does that mean it's 10 years, 5 years after the current rates? What is the timeline here, I guess, is the central question.
I'm not sure I can answer that, but...
Jamie, can you answer that?
Want to sit here?
Can you repeat that again, Dave?
This right here.
The statement in the report is that these rebuilding things are to be implemented in 5 years after the current ABCs have been established by the SSC have passed. So I assume that means the 2013 and 14 and 15 specs that were passed, that's 3 years. So then there's 5 years. Is it 5 years after those 3 years and then 10 years on top of that? Or is it 10 years from 2013 basically, it doesn't, I don't understand it.
I think it's, sorry, I think it's five plus three is eight, but the timeline that we're looking at is 10. That's the maximum. And so the idea of a rebuilding plan is that it should be achieved in 10 years. So if we do the three and then 5 years after the current ABCs, then we should have it. Yeah, I see your confusion.
So I think this is because our PDT work assumes that the current ABCs won't change. And so those 3 years of ABCs would already be considered, and then moving forward, they're talking about the five additional. I think they're referring to that 8 year versus that 10 year timeline, if I have it right.
Yes. So it should be 10 years in total.
Okay, so that's 2023, right? We start. Okay. Then my second question would be: then somebody has made a determination that we can rebuild to these current reference points in 10 years.
Well,
that seems to be a pretty. Yeah, so statement.
Well, basically, the law or the guidelines is that we try to achieve 10 years with 50% probability. So the idea of determining what the rate should be is dependent on that. It's a projection, and, you know, whether we hit that point is a 50-50 chance of hitting that point. And so there's all sorts of other things that kind of kick in depending on whether we're getting there or not. But basically, yes, we determine what we think we can do with 50-50% probability in 10-year time frame, and we implement that.
Okay. I think it's important to clarify this because, I mean, given where we supposedly are, whether we agree with it or not, to get there in 10 years seems to be pretty – I would have thought it would have been 10 years plus one mean generation like George's Bank, given how low we are and how high the number is and where we got to get to. But
yeah, we seem to be able to – it looks like we can do it in roughly 8 years, and so that prohibits us from kicking it into the 10 years plus one mean generation time, as far as I understand.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to comment on, and this is – the same thing applies for Place, because Place aren't really mentioned anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the last thing is I commend everybody for this strategy at the bottom. I think this is a much better way of moving forward. We've somehow got to account for this the ecosystem component here, and the fact that you know, biomass may not respond no matter what you do unless you get a different ecosystem than you have right now. In other words, you get another regime shift back to what these reference points were based on. So I think this is a more realistic approach to solving the problem moving forward than what we've done in the past. Thank you.
Any other questions from the audience? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce, Laura, Mike. Anyone else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you were just informed that there was no quorum at the SSC. Dr. Sullivan did what he had to do afterwards, canvass SEC members who were not present to get their views. If they were listening on the web, on the cam, maybe I would be more inclined to say, all right, fine, they couldn't be there, they were listening in, sort of a conference call, a mix of being present and being online. So it's very troubling that we have important recommendations from the SSC and they're not really formal recommendations because the SSC was not there with a quorum. I guess I'll just have to express my concern regarding that and ask the chair and the executive director, if we have an existing policy regarding what we do when the SSC provides recommendations or decisions and they don't have a quorum. I can't recall if we have anything that would provide us with guidance as to how we should react to this sort of a situation.
Just to be specific, we're talking scallops only.
Well, that's my question.
Yeah.
Is it the August SSC? Okay, so then it's just the scallops.
Last week.
Yes.
Well, that helps me out. That, anyways, it's still a valid point. If we don't have a policy regarding how we deal with this sort of a situation, we need one. So in the future, the SSC knows how we will react to their advice if there is no quorum present. It's critical. If there's no council quorum, we can't act, and people won't take our individual decisions very seriously or collective decisions very seriously if there's not a quorum.
You've raised a good point. And Tom?
So our SSC, our operating procedures mentioned that an SSC quorum is 8 people. I think we only had 6 people at this particular meeting. Our procedures don't address the specific issue of what, you know, happens when you don't have a quorum, which is why the vice chair tried to meet our need to have an ABC by working after the meeting. You know, if you go back to Robert's rules, when you don't have a quorum, you don't have a meeting, that you can't actually take action. We have in our operating procedures, I think, 3 or 4 reasons why an SSC can be recommendation can be remanded back to the SSC by the council. And one of the reasons, the 4th one, I think, is, I'm paraphrasing, something along the lines of they didn't follow their normal procedures. And you could argue this time, I think, that because they didn't have a quorum, and because they tried to reach a quorum after the meeting, if the council's uncomfortable with that, then I think it is consistent with our policy that you should at least consider remanding the recommendation back to the SSC to have it decided, you know, get a recommendation that has a full quorum. We're a little concerned on staff with that. My assumption here would be that we are trying to plan an SSC meeting which deals with escape specifications. I'm trying to make sure I get this right. That's why I'm looking at Chris. I don't know if we have a date yet. I guess it's conceivable that if we get a quorum, we could go through the scallop ABC again. My expectation that would be that in order to keep things moving on scallops, we'd keep proceeding with the ABC we have now, even though it's not official, because, you know, the scallop, and now I'm looking at Deirdre to make sure this is right. We're supposed to vote on scallops in November for the framework, and what we don't want to do is have the PDT just treading water until an SSC meeting sometime later in October. But, I think that's something the council should consider. If you're uncomfortable with the lack of a quorum, you should consider whether you want to try and remand this back to the SSC just to have the comfort of having a recommendation with a quorum. I will be upfront that when Pat suggested this, we agreed with him that his approach was a way to proceed. We knew it might cause the council a little bit of grief, but we agreed with him that this was a way to try and get a quorum and see if the council would be comfortable with it so that we could keep moving forward with a timeline for scallops, which is pretty important.
Laura.
I had a question because it struck me, and I immediately turned to Mary Beth here, my veteran expert, to say, did we really discard 6,200 metric tons, basically 30% of what we're allowing them to catch? And then, Russ, you commented that you already have some information from HAPCAM research that would suggest that actually this number could be overstated, and that, yes, in fact, we were using old data from this older study that Mary Beth had referenced. So in the spirit of best available science, if we do have information that would suggest that that number is inflated, why can't we use the information we have that might be helpful? Because that does seem quite important, significant financially to the scallop industry.
I could try to answer that. It looks like Russ might have an answer, but from our point of view, the protocol, we have several steps we have to go through in order to recognize it as best available science. So it needs to be a peer-reviewed set of research. Typically needs to go through some kind of benchmark or SARC or SAW process. And then on top of that, it needs to be presented to us in that way. And so while we might be aware that something like this is going on, we don't have, from our point of view, we don't have all the ducks lined up in order for us to accept it for implementation at this time. But maybe Russ has comments on it as well.
Laura.
I don't want to be fresh, but maybe we could send it all around in an email and you guys could vote on it.
If it was a peer-reviewed thing, maybe we could do that. But, part of part
part of what's going on is a sort of rush to try to get everything done in a certain amount of time. And scheduling and everything like that of all of these processes, there's a lot of steps that have to take place. And we were trying to do something to try to make things work, but, you know, if people are uncomfortable with that, that's fine. But anyway, thanks.
Russ, you have a follow-up?
Sure. I just want to clarify what I did say, and that is that this is an area that we should be doing research on. It's an area where we may have information that's useful. It hasn't been analyzed in any way. So it would be very premature to indicate that we have information that says the discard rate is lower or higher. But it's something that we can look into. The real question here is, when a scallop's crushed by a dredge, how long does it remain in the dredge path? How many tide cycles, or how many minutes, or how many seconds? And so those are the kinds of things that you're going to want to investigate when you really try and home in on what that damage rate is. We're calling it discard. I understand that, but these are not animals that are being caught in the gear. They're animals that are being killed by the gear and remaining in the water.
Follow up to that, Laura.
And does the current study that we're using to project this kind of discard level go to that kind of level of minute detail?
I'm not directly familiar with the studies. Likely not. Again, these are assumptions that have been used in the assessment since about 1999. If these discard rates were unnaturally high, in other words, we overestimated the discard rates, we would see a pattern where basically our projections would be off significantly. And we're actually not seeing a pattern in that direction. We're actually seeing a pattern. There's a slight positive or retrospective pattern in the assessment. It's not serious. So we're not seeing the symptoms that this discard rate is out of whack with what we'd expect to see in terms of assessment performance.
Could I comment on
please.
This as well? Thank you. Another thing to take into mind is, as long as we're talking about the process part, if we were suddenly to find that the mortality rates caused by the dredge on the bottom were different, that probably would not mean that we would adjust this discard number and everything else would remain the same. We probably have to redo the entire assessment based on that. So that's part of the complication of the whole thing. Thank you.
Before I get to you guys, Mitch, you have a follow-up on the quorum?
Yeah, I just wanted to underscore Tom's point that the operating procedures require a quorum for the meeting that makes a recommendation. And you've heard the public express concern about there not being a quorum and the ability to have a full participation and comment at that meeting, and that the rules do allow you to send it back. So.
Thank you. Mary Beth, then Mike.
Thank you. Well, given that advice, it does seem like that we do need to consider having another SSC meeting to provide advice for an ABC for scallops, although I think Tom's advice to have the PDT proceed with the number they have so that we don't get behind schedule would be good. I think if we're going to have a second meeting for scallop review of ABC and OFL, that we request that the PDT provide the actual calculations used to come to this number for discards. I would point out that in 2012, the discard rate with a higher biomass was 4,000 metric ton approximately. And some of that, as Russ already stated, could be attributed to the fact that it depends on where the removals take place. The estimates for the Mid-Atlantic are 10%, whereas Georges Bank is 20%. There just are a lot of questions out there, so it might provide an opportunity. I think the ABC is probably not going to change too much, but for people to have better clarity around that. And the other thing that came up that there was some interest in was looking at the SAMS model, which then takes these numbers and turns it into catch advice that will come back to the committee, the AP, and the council in November. Again, when that was discussed, there was concern about slowing down the process, and if the Scholar PDT had to do that work and then come back, that it would, you know, could prevent us from making final decisions in November, and we certainly don't want to do that. But I would just ask the Executive Committee to consider some of those terms of reference for a second meeting. And then the other last thing I would say is that one member of the SSC, in commenting on the lack of a quorum, said that we should consider scheduling the meetings out, you know, further in advance. I think it's a learning process for all of us as we're, you know, doing all this and having so much for the SSC to do. But, you know, he said, you know, we're planning our council meetings out a year in advance, and certainly if things were on the calendar sooner for people, it would be easier to bring them together. So just some things to consider.
Mike.
Yeah, I would agree with Mary Beth's comments concerning how to deal with this issue of quorum, and Tom's comments that we ought to proceed with this as a working assumption about an ABC, but that in fact the quorum having an agreed value that's clearly within a quorum is probably important for process. I also wanted to dig a little bit into this issue of 6,000 or 7,000 tons of discards, which seems like pretty important compared to some of the numbers we're talking about in terms of value of other species. This is a big deal. And Pat made a comment a moment ago that if this number changed, it wouldn't necessarily just mean you know, if you went from 6,000 to 5,000, you just add 1,000 tons to the catch, because it would probably change other things within the assessment. And that's usually the case, but I'm not so clear that that's the case here. If this was a virtual population type assessment or adopt or something like that, then the catch inputs into the assessment are critically important. But as I understand, this assessment is a biomass estimate directly from survey, and so the catch doesn't actually affect the biomass assessment. What I also understand from Russ is that these discards or incidental mortality estimates, which is probably what they should be called, or non-observed mortality estimates, are calculated as a fraction of catch. And am I correct, Russ, that there's no consideration of the size composition of the catch? It's just a fraction of catch by area. Because that would be important as to the implications for the assessment.
I think there is some consideration of the size distribution of the entire population. And as Mary Beth alluded to before, it certainly makes a difference in terms of where that catch occurs, whether it's on Georges Bank or in the Mid-Atlantic. So, for instance, the projected discards in 2014 are actually projected to decline over where they were in 2013 because we anticipate less fishing a lower proportion of the fishing occurring on Georges Bank.
I raised this in the context that, as I said, I don't think the actual assessment of biomass would change, but to the extent that this unobserved mortality has a size component to it, that is, it differs by size, which could be either directly or indirectly as a result of the area factor, you'd probably be selecting the impacting the FMSY, and that would be part of the assessment. But what I'm really getting at is for a little bit more consideration of how this is done and the values themselves, to determine whether they need to be addressed within the context of the assessment and therefore within the context of determining ABC, or whether in fact they're more of an implementation issue that can be addressed within the context of an ACL. So that's not clear to me at this stage, and I think there needs to be a bit more discussion of it and understanding of the process by which these numbers are actually derived.
Dr. Sullivan, then Dr. Jim.
Yeah, so Mike, I think there is an assessment. This isn't like an area swept biomass estimate. This is actually based on CASA, the catch and size analysis. So I think there is some implementation involved in terms of the assessment where one, whatever the algorithm is that's used to look at this incidental mortality through the trawl would probably have to be back calculated through time, and that would affect the mortality rate overall, and that's likely to affect the estimates in the longer term.
anyway, it may be more complicated than just 1,000 off the top or something like that is what I'm trying to say. Thanks.
Dr. Jim.
Yeah, I'll pass. Dr. Sullivan just said what I was going to say.
John.
Yeah, not to beat a dead horse, and we'll hear about this tomorrow in the Scholar Committee report, but just a quick comparison. In 2011, it was 4,000 metric tons of discards, with 26.7 was the landings, and there were more days at sea then. So this year is projected out to be 6,300, almost 40% more on landings of 21. So the dredges are on the bottom much less time in 2013 and 11, so it really is a cause for concern. There's a lot of scallop meats involved in that, so I think we ought to take a very, very close look at this, because this in and of itself has got a huge impact on what the scallop season will be this coming year.
Laura.
If we were to send it back to the SSC, do you need a motion? So would it be appropriate to make a motion at this time?
It would.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion to send, I don't know the proper wording, but to have the SSC reconvene regarding the recommendations for harvest, for scallop harvest for 2014 through 2016. Do I have that right?
14-15.
Pardon me.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth. Is there any discussion? Dr. Pierce, any more discussion?
Well, just would the maker of the motion agree that consistent with the discussions we've had about dead discards, that the SSC should also take a look at and revisit the numbers they have provided regarding dead discards that must be subtracted from the ABC to give us the ACL? They may not be able to give us much, but those numbers are provided in the table from the SSC. So if they're going to revisit this issue of the ABC and the OFL, then why not that too?
Laura?
The recommendations for the scallop harvest with particular focus on the formulation, on the calculation of discards for the fishery. Is that okay?
Tom.
Maybe I should wait and make sure this language is adequate for... Okay. I guess I want to talk a little bit about how I would interpret this language, and I say that because we usually wind up drafting the TORs and circulating them ahead of time. But I guess my point is that the way I would interpret this is that when Deirdre and probably Devorah come into the SSC, that they would probably provide the SSC more detail about how this calculation is done. And the SSC may or may not choose to make comments on how that calculation is done. But that we would not write the TORs to tell the SSC to basically revisit the last benchmark assessment or two which have already reviewed this method, but just to make sure the SSC understands it, and then they may make comments on it. And the reason I say that is because we've had some conversations, and as Pat indicated, this is pretty well entwined in the assessment. For example, the yield per recruit calculation used to calculate the reference point, and I don't know how, Mike, somehow takes into account this incidental mortality. So, you know, it's not just the assessment that could affect this, but it could have a different result. But if you carry this to the end, you might wind up with a different reference point as well. And bluntly, we don't have time between now and November for either Devorah or Deirdre or anybody else to revisit an entire benchmark assessment. So I just want to make that clear, because we're really nervous now about being able to get the document done in time given some of the delays we've experienced already. So just to reiterate, you know, we would write the TORs to make sure that there's a clear explanation and SSC discussion of these assumptions so they know how it's calculated, and then they would say whatever they wanted to say about it. We would not go back and try and revisit all this stuff and re-justify it. At least that's why how I would interpret this motion.
Are you comfortable with that approach, Laura? PK, then Mary Beth.
Well, to Tom's point, then, I mean, I still have a question as to
how quickly you can think you can get that done. I mean, the SSC had a hard time having a quorum. I don't know how long of a notice it was for the last meeting. I mean, you're asking a lot in another month here to have a SSC meeting and with a quorum again.
Pat? If I can just provide a little bit more context there. So, in point of fact, the question did come up at the SSC meeting, and Devorah did provide an answer as to the why, and it reflected more or less what Russ was saying in terms of the balance between the Mid-Atlantic and New England and the different rates and so on and so forth. I want to add that you'll notice in the report that we have three recommendations also, which I didn't go into here. So one of the recommendations is looking at pooled and regional assessments. This is in the future for the next benchmark, that the next benchmark might examine the LPUE estimates so that they may be more useful in determining days at sea. And then finally, when we said that when no benchmark assessment has been done immediately prior to setting ABCs, it's recommended that updates go through an operational assessment. So this would help with the peer review process. And in addition, providing documentation on changes that have occurred since the previous ABC setting, for example, model settings, data inputs, updated additional diagnostics, would improve understanding and increasing the transparency. So we did listen at the meeting and have tried to include some of those things in our report to try to make things better. That doesn't address this particular issue, but hopefully it provides some context.
Okay, we're moving in on 5 o'clock with another TMGC discussion to follow this. So Mary Beth, you've got the last word.
Thank you. I'll be brief, and thank you, Pat, for that, because I think that advice from the SSC is helpful, and I would like to just agree with Tom's interpretation of the language. I think that's probably the most that we can do between now and November, and if we can get that done, that'll be good. And, you know, Russ spoke to the fact that there are assumptions in how this is derived, this estimate of discards, and I think there's some concern about assumptions within the assumptions and the calculation, and that the transparency here for everyone to understand how the number is derived is very important.
Okay. Everybody, you want last word?
I just don't think my question was answered. Realistically, are we going to get the SSC to meet and go over this and have a quorum between now and November?
I believe we're doing a doodle poll now for November. At least I was the first one on the list to sign up, so I don't know if I'll even be there. But from my perspective, what I don't see happening is we're not going to recalculate things or re-examine whatever National Fisheries Service might have in terms of additional information or anything like that. But it sounds like we'll go through the same thing we went through at this meeting, but it'll probably be a little bit shorter in the sense that everybody's looked at it already. But beyond that, what will be helpful, I think, will be we'll probably have some additional documentation for example, specifically the discard calculation. And so I don't think that's a burden. I'm looking at the service over here. I don't think that's a burden to get that documentation out. I think it's there. So I don't see it as a big hurdle for us to be able to do this.
So what I'm hearing is yes. Okay. In order to move this along, those council members who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. The motion carries 16-0-0. Thank you, Dr. Sullivan and the SSC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're going to transition directly into the TMGC report, which I'm going to give in a brief overview, and then we have a short PowerPoint presentation that was previously given to the steering committee, which summarizes a ready, 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 which summarizes a ready.